You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia. Home of Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks, weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, right here on The Key and YouTube.com at Braves Country.
Armchair.
There's something kind of about a kid that's never played baseball.
We have been hoodwinked, bamboozled, and flat out deceived.
Why did you get so drunk?
You got drunk. I'm just really exhausted.
What's in that cup?
Rum and Cokes.
Do you have any idea how important
you
this is?
Have any idea?
Really, this
you
is what you're doing?
Chief, what do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night. Try to take over the world.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
Armchair.
YouTube Live.
Radio Station.
The radio station you can call your own. What listeners like about our station?
I like everything.
It's always on my radio.
We never stop the music, except for now, when I talk.
You're listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks. We're here live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern, WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key, and simulcasting on YouTube.com/@Braves Country, your first choice for Southern sports.
Hi, I'm Mac McGee, and I don't know much, but I know one thing. We don't need your hot takes on Christmas songs, god dog it. There's 20 acceptable ones. Do your own covers and let's get it.
Armchair.
Community Access Channel.
He's the Armchair Quarterback. He's full of beer and he's full of snacks. The All-American Man.
Yeah, howdy, hi, and how the hell are you? Let it rip, by God.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells swing and jingle bells ring.
Oh yeah,
blowing
baby!
And blowing up bushels of fun. Now the
on
jingle
my way
hop
to work this morning.
Begun. Jingle bell, jingle bell,
every
jingle
Christmas
bell
song
rock.
That I pull that
jingle bell
station.
Time and jingle bell time. Dancing and prancing in Jingle Bell Square. In the frosty air. What a bright time.
Every single Christmas song that I pulled up, every station I pulled up, some knob was doing their own version of some song that you'd never heard of. Some unbelievably bad, redone, redo. I have no problem with covers. Covers are awesome when it comes to Christmas music. And when you go to turn on Christmas music, I want to hear the classics. And I'm telling you, there's like 20. This is one of them, Jingle Bell Rock. There's like 20. Outside of that, I don't give a damn about, I mean, what was the one I was listening to this morning? Christmas Mittens or something? Then I flip over and Alan Jackson had one that he was doing his own version of some song that I'd never heard of. Do the classics and don't try to peddle some brand new song. It's not going to work. We want to hear Christmas music, the songs we know, for about 10 days. And then after that, get the hell out of here with it. So that's why we started today's show with a classic. And if you don't know Jingle Bell Rock, you know now, by God. So the rest of the week, we are going to be coming in and out of breaks with Christmas songs. The ones that I deem appropriate classics. I don't want to hear some crap. Every once in a while, someone breaks through with a version, but it's typically something we already know. This is, I don't have time for that. No one has time for that nonsense. All right, let's get going. Got a little time to do this and got a lot to get into. And looking forward to National Signing Day, College Football National Signing Day. It's going to be a lot of fun. So when all the dust settles and we finally get all the rankings and everything out. So we're going to wait till tomorrow's show to react to all that, because honestly, it's going to be going up and down and in and out, and there's going to be so many shocking moves that are being coming in and out. I'm not going to worry about doing it now, but it's going to be a lot of fun. If you missed earlier in the week, a legacy guy leaving Georgia. He had already announced that he was leaving the University of Georgia. He's heading home. And I don't think Georgia fans can realistically hate on the young man. He's a five-star linebacker heading back home, going to Florida State, where his dad finished number four in the Heisman Trophy voting back in 1992. Marvin Jones Jr., Marvin Jones obviously his dad, and had a pretty good pro career, but was never what everybody thought he was going to be when he hit the NFL. But man, was he an absolute beast when he was at Florida State. And like I said, he had a pretty good career, played for the Jets. I don't want to say he bounced around for a couple other teams, but Marvin Jones Jr. heading home. And you could make the argument, and I'm not talking about all time what they did in the National Football League. I'm just talking about strictly what they did on the field in college football. You can make the argument that Marvin Jones Sr., may be one of, if not the very best defenders to ever put on the Garnet and Gold. When you think of it, you think of Derek Brooks, you think of Ron Simmons, Deion Sanders comes to mind, but Marvin Jones Jr. is right up there with the best of it. And there's a whole litany of them, but those are the ones from the original era when they first flipped the script, when Bobby Bowden first changed the face of college football. Florida State and the Miami Hurricanes pretty much did it at the same time, where they decided to start putting athletes on defense and not put your best athletes always on offense. They put them on the defensive side of the ball, and it really changed the landscape of college football. And then after that, you started seeing them do it in the Southeastern Conference. You started seeing them do it all over the place. But it really began with Florida State and Miami in the 1980s. And people who hate on those two universities and do not like the two universities, I get it. You can't deny that. The speed on the defense in a Florida State-Miami game in the 1980s, early 1990s, all the way through the 90s, the defensive speed on that field was a different level. And any SEC head can tell you whatever they want to, they're wrong. In the 1980s, in 1990s, the speed on the field at a Florida State-Miami game, defensively especially, was the best in the country, and it wasn't particularly close. All right, we move on from that. I did get a little tidbit sent my way that I thought was pretty interesting. There was a graphic that was out, and basically it was laying out what we already knew, and I already kind of touched on this before, but when all these clowns come at you and say, well, Florida State shouldn't have been in the playoffs, and they had no reason being in the playoffs, well, they're wrong. And there's no other stat that can slap it right in the face in this. Florida State had the most bowl-eligible teams in all of college football, the highest percentage in all of college football. 11 of the 14 college football teams in the Atlantic Coast Conference were bowl-eligible, meaning six wins or more. Pac-12 had half, at 6 of 12. The Big 12 had 9 of 14. The SEC and Big 10, 9 of 14 as well. The ACC, 11 of 14. And we are what we're seeing is a mass exodus in that game now. All kinds of players from the Florida State side have started to announce that they're not going to play in that game. So once again, the game is going to literally be meaningless and pointless. I don't even know if I'm going to watch. I feel like I'm going to, but I don't know if I am. Because we're having a get-together with a couple of friends that can't that normally come over and hang out with us on Christmas. And it sounds like Georgia's getting hyped up and wanting to play all their players. All right. Well, Florida State's, we're ballparking it. You're going to have somewhere around 20 to 25 players. Scholarship athletes that will opt out of that game, whether it be the transfer portal, there's a few leaving, not many, or because they're declaring for the NFL draft. And I think they should. They have readily told you that what happens on the field doesn't matter. So there's really no point of going all in and saying, hey, we need to go out here and really make sure that we make a statement. Now, what I would have loved to have seen, I would have loved to have seen Florida State go out there and either A, just not play the game at all, or B, play the first half, put the absolute wood on a very talented Georgia team, and then pull their starters and say, that's what you would have gotten had we been in the playoffs. But I understand why these kids, and look, honestly, the Georgia players shouldn't play. You know the next step that's going to happen with this, because we're already seeing all these players not playing because they're heading to the draft, et cetera, et cetera. The next step in these bowl games is going to be players that won't play in the bowl game because they don't want to get hurt and get ready for next year, even though they're staying in college and staying at the school. That's the next step. So I'm going to throw this out here one more time. And this has been my baby, and I'm going to continue to pound the table until we see it. I pounded the table for years. We finally got the expansion of the playoffs. A year too late, but we got it. I'm going to say this once and for all. If you want the bowl games to matter, and I'm talking about the ones that have nothing to do with the college football playoff. We know they're going to expansion. They're going to 12. That 12, if you think it's staying at 12, you've lost your brain. It'll be at 16. It'll be at 32 within 5 to 10 years. But the ones that are not in those, if you want the bowl games to be watchable, have good viewership, have good fan turnout, and have players actually want to play in them, it's something that you got to change, because the landscape of college football has changed. So you've got to evolve with it. College football by far is the oldest and slowest to adapt to its environment. I mean, how long did it take to get four teams in a playoff? How long did it take to get two teams in a playoff? When did we start the BCS in 1998? I started watching college football in the very early 1980s. In theory, I was watching in 78 and 79. Really didn't know what the hell was going on. 1980 is essentially the first year I really remember watching college football. And I was aware that it existed, but I was much too young to. But the point is, I felt like it took forever, and I was, what, in my mid-20s when they finally had a BCS ranking, which still to this date is still the best way to choose. You can't leave it up to these bozos in the committee. If you want the most fitting teams to make the playoffs, it needs to be done by a computer. Sorry, but it is what it is. It's true. But if you want these games to matter and you want people to go to a bowl game, you've got to flip the script and move the bowl games out of December, out of January, and you got to move them all the way up to August, to Labor Day weekend. Have a bonanza of college bowl games. It would take 1 year for the fans and everyone to digest it and get used to it, and they would fall in love with it. They would start making their Labor Day weekend travel plans to go see Georgia and Florida State in the Orange Bowl in Miami on Labor Day weekend. How fun would that be? That is the only way you're going to get these to ever matter again. Because I honestly cannot tell you who were in these bowl games until I pull them up some days, because I'm thinking about playing the spread. Because they don't matter. And then the next thing you do when you do pull up the spreads, one of the reasons why I don't really pay attention to them, is because you're no longer having much of a feel of, well, this is this team versus this team. No, it's not. It's whoever decided to actually play versus whoever decided to actually play. It's the laundry that you're familiar with, but it's not the same players. So if you want to save the bowl system, college football, the bowls need to be played in August. I mean, you don't necessarily have to do them all on Labor Day weekend, but have them at the beginning of the year. Have them before conference play begins. So in other words, have all your bowl games played in the first couple of weeks of September. And you could spread them out. They don't all have to take place on Labor Day weekend. You could start some on that week zero, which would be a lot of fun. But that's the memo, and I'll continue. I'll die on that hill. I don't know why they haven't been smart enough to figure this out, but I will die on that hill. And I dare anybody to tell me that wouldn't work. Of course it would work. The other thing they've got to do in college football is they've got to fix the college football calendar. So not only are we talking about the bowls right now, we are in the middle of the transfer portal and early recruiting signing day, along with the bowls. And this has got another reason why you need to get rid of the bowls at this time. You got all this coming to a head at the same time. The transfer portal should not be open during bowl season. It's that simple. You don't have to move the transfer portal or signing day. I think it's fine where it is. You get it in right before Christmas, and then everybody gets a break, and then you come back, and come January, you kind of get an idea of where your team is, and you try to add some folks in February. But you got to get rid of the bowls because it's cluttering it up. I don't even know how a team in the playoffs is even dealing with this. How the hell do you juggle this, especially if it's your first time around? I know Sarkisian has been on teams that have been in the playoffs, but I'm talking about you're running the show. How in the world do you juggle this? Can you imagine what's going on at Washington right now? They're getting ready to play their first playoff NIT. That's what I've been calling it, the National Invitational Tournament. They're getting an opportunity to play in their first NIT tournament, and they've got to juggle transfer portal and National Signing Day all at once. By the way, how about that news that Dylan Gabriel of Oklahoma is heading to Oregon? How about that? Makes you wonder the health of the Oklahoma football program. And remember they brought in Venerable from Clemson to take over when their guy headed west and headed to USC, and now all of a sudden they're having guys leave. When the hell did you ever think you would see a guy leave Oklahoma as a quarterback. I'm talking about in the last 20, 25 years. Leave Oklahoma as a quarterback to go play for the Oregon Ducks. But that's what's happening right now. So there you have that. Did you see this nonsense? This unbelievable nonsense? I'm sure by now everybody has seen it, but I haven't had a chance to react to it. Rashad Mendenhall. What the hell is this guy talking about? He is literally... So here's the tweet that he put out. If you're not familiar with who Rashad Mendenhall is, can't blame you. He had a very, very mediocre career in the National Football League. And evidently is a hell of a racist son of a gun. But anyways, Rashad Mendenhall goes on Twitter, and you know that he thinks he's important, because I did notice, and I don't think no one else pointed this out, but I noticed that he's got the blue check mark. Anybody's got the blue check mark on Twitter, for folks who are not on, don't understand what's going on. Last several months, I guess it's been a couple years, they've started charging people to have the blue check mark. It's not much a month. I think it's $9 or $10 a month. But most of us won't do it out of the principle of it. And you kind of look like a fraud. Anybody who's paying for that blue check mark is literally just trying to go to the front of the line with their tweets. That's literally what you're paying for. If you don't have the blue check mark, your tweets get lost in the algorithm. But this is the tweet that he puts out. He was watching NFL football this weekend. I don't know what game he was watching. But he says, now he's 36 years old. And if you want to have an idea of Rashad Mendenhall in his career, because you would think that Rashad Mendenhall was just an elite player in the National Football League. Not so much. Rashad Mendenhall, he's 36 years old. He's been out of the game for several years. He played for the Pittsburgh Steelers from 2008 to 2012. And famous, we'll get to his famous play in the Super Bowl here in a second. But he said, I'm sick of average white guys commenting on football. Y'all not even good at football. Can we please replace the Pro Bowl with an all-black versus all-white bowl? Yeah, because that's progress, right? All-white bowl so that these cats can stop trying to teach me who's good at football. I'm better than your goat. Now, the thing is, it was such an odd comment. Nobody knows who the hell he's talking about. He's better than their goat. And I'm sure he's referring to some version of a white football player, but I don't know if he's talking about the greatest of all time to ever play in the NFL, which is Tom Brady. So that's obviously nonsense that he could even possibly be thinking that he's better than Tom Brady at football. Anybody, you know what? People who don't even know football know better than that nonsense. Tom Brady's going to the Hall of Fame. Rashad Mendenhall's going back to Twitter to pay his $12 a month so he can have a blue check mark. By the way, the elite, so athletes and other celebrities, some of them have been given the blue check mark. So there is a difference. But Rashad Mendenhall is not one of the guys that's given a blue check mark because he sucked. I mean, he was okay. But he had two seasons where he averaged over 4 yards a carry. That's it. For his career, he averaged under 4 yards a carry. And he played for six seasons, five with the Steelers, one with Arizona. But anyways, so we know he's not talking about Tom Brady. How the hell could he? He can't be talking about that he's the best running. He's a better running back than Christian McCaffrey, because that's utter nonsense. If he's talking about current, if he's talking about all time, that's utter nonsense. That debate could go on and on and on, but you know, you just think of some of the guys, Larry Zonka, John Riggins. He couldn't hold their jock straps. Anyways, he's a full-blown moron, but, and obviously a racist, but it is funny because some folks have been reacting to it and having their own debate and having some fun with it, and that's always fun because you got guys out there going back and forth. I saw one podcast. I really don't know who they are, but it was entertaining, whoever these guys were, and they were going back and forth. It was a white guy, it was a black guy. They were going back and forth about who would have the advantage in a Pro Bowl of black NFL players versus white NFL players today. And it was kind of funny because their reactions going back and forth. The first thing that they brought up was the coaching. And, of course, the white guy's going, well, we got you crushed in coaching. And the black guy was laughing, saying, hey, that's not fair because you haven't been letting us coach very long. So they had some fun with that back and forth. They admitted that, or they agreed to agree on the fact that quarterback would be a push. Running back, I think, essentially is a push. No one is better than Christian McCaffrey, but, I mean, there's such great running backs all throughout the National Football League. The guy that he was pointing to was Derrick Henry. I don't know if that's currently the second best running back in the NFL. It's hard to say because he's been on a bad team this year. But he's definitely in the argument. But if you look at their stats, I mean, it's not even close. Wide receiver, you would definitely give the nod to the all-black team. But I will say this, it's pretty darn good. I mean, you're also, don't forget, you've got Cooper Kupp and Adam Thielen who are having pretty damn good years. Tight end, forget about it. Kelce is by far the best. And you're talking about Sam Laporta, who's a rookie. You're talking about, tight end's an absolute landslide, along with the offensive line. Defensive line, I think you give the ends to the all-white team, the interior to the all-black team. Wide receiver, defensive backs, and I would say most of the secondary, you would give the nod to the all-black team, but you would give the ends, you know, because you got the Boses, you got the Watts. I mean, come on. And then the linebackers, it's going to be a landslide for the all-white teams. And then of course, they had some fun, like, who the hell is going to kick you a field goal? So they did have some fun with it. But all in all, not a big deal, but just a stupid-ass comment by Rashard Mendenhall. But I don't know if he was trying to get noticed to try to, who knows if he's trying to push a podcast. I don't know. But I will say this. Well, one thing that did work about it, it did get him noticed. People are talking about it and having some fun with it. Okay. We're going to take a really quick break. When we come back, we are going to hit the early lines and grab a couple of games. We'll be back in a flash. Brand new for the 2024 Braves Country Radio broadcast season. Along with pitch-by-pitch, play-by-play, the classic call of Braves Country Baseball, we will bring you a live pregame show and postgame show. The phone lines wide open for you to call, react, or ask your questions along with the chat. That's Braves Country Today pregame, Braves Country Tonight postgame. We'll see you in 2024.
It's the best in sports and entertainment. And get locked in and locked down with Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. with your host, me, Ryan O'Neill, each and every morning right here with the best in sports and entertainment, all the way from professional sports to college sports to River Dragons hockey and everything in between, including some of the very best local and national guests. It's the Rhino Radio Penitentiary, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m., Monday through Fridays, right here on 99.1 FM WQEE.
Hey, Braves Country, this is Mac McGee with Braves Country Radio. We are bringing you pitch by pitch, play by play of your Atlanta Braves all year long. Please like and subscribe today. It's free, and it helps us bring you more of the game we all love. Braves Country Radio, your home for the classic call of Braves Country Baseball. This is one of the acceptable ones that's a little off the beaten path. I didn't grow up listening to this version, this song. This is a great job by Mariah Carey. But this is the outlier that proves the rule. Leave the classics alone, because when Christmas comes around, I want to hear this. I want to hear some stupid ass version of some song that you think is going to be a hit. All right, let's go ahead and get into it. Couple things that need to hit up real quick. First of all, we're still waiting on the market to really take off for free agency in baseball. So we're going to pump the brakes on that. We're waiting on the Bellingers and the Haters. That's Josh Hader, not the Haters. Like, the people got ticked off when they saw that the Braves picked up Matt Carpenter's contract and then released him a few days later. And I saw so many people overreacting on social media, with and without check marks. And the unbelievable, first of all, the worst is Facebook. I am convinced the dumbest people on the planet get their news and give their hot takes on Facebook. Not saying that you can't give your opinion about something on Facebook, but if it's sports related and that is where you are getting your news, or that is where you are pretty much living, because you can always tell the idiots that are on Facebook, that live on Facebook and get their information from Facebook, from the people who are on Twitter, because Twitter is where all your sports writers give their information at. So there's just so much more information handy. On Facebook, you have to scroll in between what may be a news story, what may be clickbait, or hell, it might just be a picture of your aunt's figgy pudding or your next door neighbor's brand new tricycle that they bought for their kid for Christmas. So that's why I've always preferred Twitter when you're talking about sports. Facebook is fine to keep up with your friends, but the idiocy, like any of these fan pages on Facebook, they have you talk about box of rocks. Just unbelievable dumb box of rocks. But anyways, I digress. With all the different moves that went on, one of the ones that everyone freaked out the most about is, why the hell would you make a trade for Matt Carpenter, who's owed $4.5 million, and then you are going, or actually, I think he was actually owed a little over five. And then you release him a few days later, It was because you were getting Ray Kerr in the deal. Now, you can argue whether or not he's worth it. I don't really know. I do know I've seen him pitch, and the ball explodes out of his hand. I also know he's 29 years old. So it's not like you're getting some young phenom that you're about to get controllable years for the next decade and let's roll. But Ray Kerr is under pre-arbitration for 2024, 2025, and 2026. So for the next 3 years, they have Ray Kerr. They believe in him. I guarantee you, the biggest number that jumped off the page at them is that he had a strikeout rate over 11 per nine innings. And he's a lefty. San Diego knew that that they had a guy who's pretty darn good. They were not going to give him up just for anything. So that's why they said, because they're trying to clean house with money, they said, we will give you Kerr, but you've got to take Matt Carpenter in the deal because we're trying to shed salary. Now, the Braves did get San Diego to pay $1.5 million of his salary. So they're still on the hook for about four. But what they're looking at, if you look at it big picture, they're looking at it is they're going to pay for Kerr, who, by the way, still has options left. So he doesn't have to be on the 40-man roster. They're going to make the move to have Kerr come onto the staff, develop him, hopefully get him to pitch the way they want him to pitch in the next couple of years. I would tend to think that they hope he's going to be elite sooner than later so that he's not spending the majority of the next three seasons where you have controllable years down in the minors. But what I reference, those are all pre-arbitration years. Even after 2026, they're going to have a couple of arbitration years. So it'll be 2029 before he's a free agent. Unless the Braves decide to cut him loose. But the point is, they're paying a little bit now. And remember, they saved some money in the offseason when they moved guys like Soroka and whatnot, because they weren't going to take them to arbitration. So they're paying a little bit up front to be able to have him for the long term. He's not expected to be on the opening day roster. This was a minor move, but it got everybody's attention because Matt Carpenter, a former All-Star, was involved in the deal. Matt Carpenter is at the end of his deal. I don't know if anyone's even going to pick up Matt Carpenter. The Braves released him. We'll see. I'd say someone's going to give him a chance. If Matt Carpenter may not even want to play. Matt Carpenter might be done. He looked done last year, so the Braves cut him because they don't want to have to try to bring in some aging, grizzled, snaggletooth bastard into the fold when they're going with the youth movement. But anyways, that's what's going on. But as far as the rest of Major League Baseball, waiting for that next hammer to drop, and I think we're going to get one, maybe even two, big name free agents to sign by Christmas, and that will really open the floodgates. So we look forward to that. On that note, we will not be here on the week of Christmas. Christmas going into New Year's, going to kind of recharge the batteries and whatnot. We'll do some planning on doing some Once Upon a Pastime, whatnot, but we're going to take that Christmas week off. If something major were to happen to the Braves, we would do a show, but we're going to plan on not having anything on the hopper that day. But we are adding a couple of new Once Upon a Pastimes as we are working into the World Series part of it. And game two, game three is going to be a fun one. Game three, was going over it and getting prepared for it the other day. We're going to talk about who would be the all-time World Series team. And when we say that, we're talking about how they performed in the World Series. So in other words, Ted Williams isn't going to be on there, even though he would be on my all-time team. But he's not going to be on my all-time World Series team for obvious reasons. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And obviously, one of the criteria is you had to have won a championship. So you, but there is a Red Sox on that team, I believe. I'm pretty sure. So we look forward to doing that. Let's go ahead and get into, you know, and before we dive into the football, one more last note on the Tyler Glasnow going over to L.A. from Tampa. Everybody's up in arms. 5 years, $135 million. A lot of folks are still ticked off because of the Shohei Ohtani deal and basically how it was worked, opened the gates for them to bring in Glasnow. But before you freak out and think that they got the greatest thing since sliced bread, I still think stuff-wise, Glasnow probably had the best stuff out there. Not named Yamamoto. You can make the argument Snell has a little better stuff. But regardless, he's up there. But the man has only thrown over 100 innings twice since 2017. His first full year in the league. Twice! The most innings he's ever thrown was last year at 120. And he has an ERA of 3.53 in 2023. That was his best ever. What has always made Glasnow a household name for us seam heads is because you can see the talent and you know what he should be. And there are times where you're going to see him go out on the mound. You're like, my God, this guy could win a Cy Young. But he's never been consistent. So just keep that in mind before we start freaking out. Listen to a lot of folks who were in the know, and so many of them still keep pointing to the Braves aren't done. I still say cease, but we'll see if I'm telling you, Corbin Burnes is not going to be a Milwaukee Brewer for much longer. It'll be interesting to see where he lands as well. I think the main if you're wondering, okay, well, who would Atlanta be competing against right now? If they're smart, you've got to, and I mean you've got to put your hat in the ring if you're the Baltimore Orioles. That is the biggest thing that you're missing. Baltimore's going to get some pitching back this year. I still think that they would be very well set up if they went out and signed Josh Hader. I just wonder about the whole thing that when Bautista does come back, how does that play into it? But Baltimore needs starting pitching more than anything else. All right, real quick, we're going to hit the power rankings, and then after that, we're going to give you a couple of picks, and then we're going to jam on out of here because, got a lot of stuff to do, and let's go ahead and dive into it. The power rankings, we're not going to spend a lot of time on this. I think these are pretty obvious. The number one team in the National Football League, for my money, is the San Francisco 49ers, and I really don't think it's particularly close. And if you want to talk about who the second best team in the National Football League is, that one can be up for debate. But right now, going into this week, I'm going to give it to the Baltimore Ravens. They went into Jacksonville. They played a very tough environment going into Jacksonville and thoroughly dominating the game. And I just believe that Baltimore, look, you can poke holes. I don't know if they have the ability to get to the Super Bowl. But if they can get home field advantage throughout the playoffs, and right now they would have it, that's going to be a tough environment to go into Baltimore and win a playoff game. My number three team, Jalen Hurts. And the Eagles have lost three in a row. Jalen Hurts and the Eagles lost a tough one Monday night. But Hurts was also sick. I'm not willing to give up on Philly yet. I think they're just having an end of the season swoon. I think this is a team that's going to bounce back. And I believe that they will find a way into the NFC Championship game. I would be shocked if they're not the representative. But they're going to have to get some things going in their direction. And one of the things would be the fact that right now they are not the number two seed in the NFC. It's the Dallas Cowboys. So keep that in mind. I still think they square off in January. I mean, even if it's in Dallas, wouldn't you say Philly's probably a slight favorite? If not, it's a pick 'em. From what we saw of Dallas spitting the bit again, I mean, come on. My number four team, I'm going to give it to the Miami Dolphins. I still think they're a paper tiger, but if they are at home and if they can continue to win, they will get a bye. If they are at home, they will be at home until they have to go to Baltimore for the AFC title game. Now, they've got a game coming up with the Cowboys, and then they play the Ravens. If they can somehow find a way to win in Baltimore, ooh, that's a game changer. I don't think they will. And so that's one of the things they got to be keep an eye on. The Chiefs are pecking at their heels. If Miami beats Dallas, but then goes to Baltimore and loses, which is what the books would say, Kansas City would then slide back into that number two spot because, remember, they got the tiebreaker against the Dolphins. Detroit's going to be my number five team. Kansas City, my number six team. They've looked sluggish. I still think with that defense and Patrick Mahomes, you just can't count them out. And the number seven team currently is not in the playoff picture. They are currently on the outside looking in, but I believe they are going to find a way in. And once they get in, nobody's going to want to face the Buffalo Bills. Number eight team is Dallas. Number nine team is the Los Angeles Rams. Rams, another team barely hanging on. They're the number seven seed. They're the number seven seed. Barely hanging on. Right now, they would be the seventh seed in the playoffs. They would find a way in. But if the Rams can find a way in, that is a tough team to game plan for with Cooper Kupp, Stafford, Puka Nacua, and Kyron Williams. Man, if you watch this kid run, he's phenomenal. We'll do the number 10 team here right before we leave. There's a reasoning for it, so it's part of my walk-off. Okay. Let's go ahead and hit a couple of lines, and then we will. By the way, did you see this? Jeter Downs, who was a part of the Mookie Betts trade and got traded over to the Red Sox, and infamously it was talked about how he was named after Derek Jeter. The New York Yankees claimed him off of waivers. I thought that was pretty cool. Oh, and Andrew McCutchen is coming back for 2024 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right, let's go ahead and get us a pick or two before we dive out of here. Okay, real quick, we're going to dive into these. We're going to grab you a couple of picks early part of the slate. You got a game on Thursday. You've got a game on Saturday, 4:30, Bengals-Steelers. We'll have the call on Braves Country Radio. And then the 8 o'clock Saturday night game is Bills-Chargers. That game is on Peacock. Good luck watching that junk. I don't even think we have Peacock anymore at their house. And I'm not rushing to go out and get it because I don't care who about the Chargers. And I feel like the Bills will probably put the smackdown on them. So anyways, let me go ahead and give you what we're going to do here is we are going to give you a early pick here. The Thursday night game, the Rams are -4 at home against the Saints. I'm not convinced the Saints are that good. I'm really not. So give me, by the way, we are updated record 55-34-2. Pretty good. We had an okay week. We were one game above 500, but it's definitely not one of our better weeks this week. But 55-34-2, pretty good, pretty good. Give me the Rams minus the 4 points. I just feel like they're going to lay the wood. They're going to absolutely lay the wood. The Bengals are a 2.5-point favorite in Pittsburgh. The over-under is 36.5. Saturday night, Bills 11.5-point favorite. What? And the over-under is 43.5. So, with that being said, I'm not going to pick the Bengals-Steelers game because I'm doing the game. Bills-Chargers, 11.5, and then you take it all the way down to 43.5 is the over-under. Give me a teaser. I'm going to take Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. I won't pick a team to win on those spreads, but I will give you the point total. I think it's going to be a little higher scoring. Give me the over under 36.5. I'm going to tease that to over 30.5 points. And the Buffalo Chargers game, give me Buffalo on the second part of that teaser. Tease them down to -5.5. And there you have it. And the number 10 team of the power rankings, the Florida State Seminoles, second college football playoff committee. You did us dirty. They should be in the playoffs instead of everybody opting out of their meaningless bowl game. Have a good one, y'all. And we will see you tomorrow. We'll be able to react to a lot of football news mañana. Have a great one.
Goodbye, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. We're back tomorrow with another show.
Well, unless we're fired, we'll talk to you then. Goodbye, sweetheart. Goodbye.
Guys and gals, it's time to go. We'll see you on the next show.
Same bat time, same bat channel.
Thanks for listening to Braves Country with Mac McGee and the Armchair Quarterbacks on 99.1 FM WQEE, The Key in Noonan, Georgia, and simulcasting on youtube.com/@Braves Country. Braves Country comes your way weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern to 5 p.m. Eastern. Please follow, like, and subscribe today. Armchair Quarterback Radio, your first choice for Southern sports.
Something of the 5th of September, something of the 5th of September. She said a lot that I can't remember, something of the 5th. Can I get another cigarette, please? Can I get another cigarette, please? Yeah, I know I live to regret it, just give me another cigarette, please.
You're listening to WQEE 99.1 FM, The Key in Noonan, Georgia.